Well, here's your chance to talk with a real explorer who knows about world events. Next on Coast to Coast, Robert Young-Pelton and your calls. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Robert Young-Pelton with us. Robert, any trips coming up for you?
Yeah, I've got to get over to Africa, to South Sudan, to meet up with Kony's people, because I'm still doing that Finding Kony book and have to Kony. So my people have been living with his bodyguards for the last year. And then I'm going to Mozambique to find out who's behind the insurgency in the north, where the liquid natural gas is.
Mm-hmm.
And that should keep me busy until Christmas.
You still in the knife manufacturing business?
Oh, yeah. I still I'm making, designing and making these beautiful knives, AX gear, which people probably enjoy. And I make sure that our U.S. military and our special operations folks have high-quality knives instead of lowest cost bidder.
Well, that makes that makes a difference. You know, it really does.
It does.
And can people see some of your product on your websites?
Yeah, just go to dpxgear.com and you'll see it, and you'll enjoy it.
DPX Gear? Okay.
Yep. Dangerous Places Extremes, dpxgear.com.
How is Europe looking at us these days as, you know, we used to be the savior of the planet? Are they still looking at us that way?
Well, Europe has their own problems.
Yeah, they do.
Europe. You know, Europe used to enjoy all the American tourists coming over and spending all kinds of money, and now Europe seems to be squabbling amongst itself and trying to get rid of tourists. They have some serious problems. They can't get together. The whole EU thing has turned into a big squabble match with, you know, migrants, of course, and then the right wing is starting to come up, and Steve Bannon's over there stirring things up. So they have a lot of problems, and they're not feeling very unified, and America doesn't really care about Europe that much. We're beating up the NATO alliance. We don't care what's happening in Afghanistan, which is a European-American event. So we're sort of just ignoring them.
Did you hear that story? I'm not sure if you heard that story or not. We're trying to get you on the phone at the beginning. But that someone on Google Earth thinks he found MH370, that plane that went down with 239 people in the ocean, and the one that we think the pilot ditched. But you can clearly see what looks like a jet in the jungle there. It's amazing.
Well, that'd be cool. The problem is those satellite images can range in age from like 10 years old to 5 minutes old, so it's a little hard to get consistent satellite data. But if he's found it, that's great.
You won't see what happens. Let's go to the phones. Cornelius is with us in Louisiana. Hello there, Cornelius. You with us? Nope, he's not there. Let's move on to another call. Let's go to Michael in Virginia Beach. Hey, Michael, go ahead.
Thank you. Before I ask my question to Mr. Pelton, I first want to comment to you, George. Did you notice that Robert Pelton described the Arab Spring as the work of outside forces,
mm-hmm.
working in kind of a shadowy manner? Rather than the more overt manner that we've seen in places like Afghanistan and Iran and Iraq. Now, I'm wondering if a similar situation has long existed in Central America, a kind of Arab Spring going on down there, which could be greatly intensified if certain outside parties decided to do that. I wonder, Robert, what do you think about that?
Well, you've struck upon a very good point, because the actual root cause of Arab Spring was caused by sort of tough leadership that was subsidizing products to the population. And as prices rose and they had to increase prices on things like bread and fuel, the people got angry because obviously they have high unemployment. Now, if you look at Venezuela, Nicaragua, places like that, you have very similar situations in which you have sort of a strongman government and you have subsidized products, and as those products get more expensive and they expect the government to supply them for free, it's a perfect opportunity for outsiders to go in there and start uniting and stirring up people to rise up against the government. And as you know, we've been trying to overthrow, or we were trying to overthrow Chavez for many, many years, and things are falling apart in Nicaragua, et cetera, et cetera. You know, the question is there an end game? So, you know, it's easy to overthrow a government, but does something go in and replace it? And what I'm seeing is less and less of major countries wanting to replace governments. Like, if you look at Libya, which was very much destabilized by internal elements, but then we went in and turned up the heat and ended up killing Gaddafi. Well, we're doing, you know, bugger all to actually make Libya a stable place anymore because we like it that way.
So we did want Chavez out of Venezuela. Was it ironic that he would die of cancer?
Well, he was supporting the FARC rebels in Colombia, and he was being a bad boy. And the CIA was very actively undermining, you know, his rule. And Venezuela is an oil-rich country. There's no reason for it to be poor, right? And we managed to basically tip things over. The problem is we never put anything back in place. And so I don't see any strong indications from our government that we want to go in there and create a stable environment.
Joe in Baltimore, welcome to the program. Joseph, go ahead.
Robert, this is Joe in Baltimore.
Hi there.
Hi, Joe.
I was wondering, do you believe that Trump's foreign policy options are limited by the Mueller investigation, particularly as concerning like military intervention, like in Korea?
Good question. Yeah, so there was an element of clarity when he first took office. You remember major donors wanted him to move the capital or the embassy to Jerusalem, and then
he did very
quickly, and so it looked like he was off to a good start by just taking a firm hand and doing things. And even Korea was one of the first times that people said, wow, it looks like I was wrong. He actually did do something, and he was very forceful, like I said, in sending in special operations troops inside the country to let the dictator know that his time was up. But then the Mueller investigation has so badly undermined his credibility and even his time. I mean, they're going after his kids, they're going after all the people around him, all the people who got him elected, and he's got multiple other lawsuits. So he's basically just treading water at this point, and he doesn't really have a lot of time to make major points overseas. And Pompeo's not making much headway. Bolton's not doing much, so we're sort of in stalemate now.
And this apparent infighting that's going on there is not going to help him at all either, is it?
Well, okay, so you know, I know some people that were part of the transition, and don't forget the Obama administration did terrible, terrible things to Trump as an outsider when he came in. They didn't even tell him where the money was. You know, they didn't even tell him where the keys were to things. So the Trump administration started off with a major handicap, and you know, they talk about deep state, and they talk about all these things related to sort of insider and, as you say, sort of infighting. But he's got 8 years of entrenched Democrat appointees, basically slow-rolling, undermining, backstabbing, whatever. So even if he's a mildly competent president, he's not getting the full support of the government.
Or some of his own staff members, apparently.
Well, he's an abrasive person. I mean, as a businessman, you turn and burn, right? If somebody doesn't do something you want, you fire him, you move on, you get somebody else in that spot. But then you create this huge media backlash, and then the, you know,
I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah, I mean, he's been every single second of the day, there's something that says Trump in the headline. So it's very difficult to have a cohesive, clear leadership position when the media is drowning you in all this sort of Kardashian-type coverage.
Is it too much? I mean, I think people are fed up with this stuff.
Yes, but we saw this during the Clinton administration. We saw this during the Nixon administration, where these domestic assassination attempts just override the entire foreign policy and even the economic things we're trying to do. So it's not healthy, and at the end of the day, you know, Trump's a marked man. Does anybody care if we win the war in Afghanistan? No, because they're focused on this domestic.
Does anybody even know we're still in Afghanistan? You know, I would guess if you polled most Americans, they wouldn't know.
Well, they would know. They wouldn't know to what degree. I mean, we don't have many people over there, and we're not doing much. And they don't know that we're also in Yemen. We're also in Syria. We're also in Mali, Niger, you know, you name it.
We're everywhere.
Nobody really lays out what we're trying to do internationally anymore because it's too complex. We just rather focus on Russians, and use it as a negative thing against the presidency.
Annie in Alabama's with us. Go ahead, Annie.
Thank you. Robert, I would like to ask you if you agree with me that this is a plot to just kill people off by the millions. The government wants to put blood pressure medicine over the counter so that you won't need a doctor's prescription, nor will insurance or Medicaid pay for it. And so you're going to have millions of Medicaid patients dropping dead. Is that what they want them to do, is drop dead?
Where'd this come from, Annie?
It's in the news. I heard it on Fox News.
Doing away with the prescription for blood pressure.
I don't
know
which drug you're talking about, but I'm assuming that lowering the standards for, you know, prescription for drugs is probably a good thing if it's not a toxic drug. But
it's not an opioid, that's for sure.
No, that's for sure. But at the end of the day, I mean, many drugs become commonly available in blood thinners, whether it's aspirin or prescription stuff, is probably not that lethal.
Tom and Brooke in the Bronx. Hey, Thomas, go ahead.
Yes, how are you?
Good, Tom.
I'd like to say this. Washington, D.C. is fundamentally off their rockers. They go around the world promoting idiotic programs, logic. They never stop with this stuff. When they go in there to fix things, everything goes worse. It becomes a worse situation. And I wish they would get a hold of themselves, take stock of themselves, and stop this stuff. Really. Like the Mideast, for instance, the Libya, they're going to fix Libya up, and Libya is a mess. It's a hotbed of problems. Other areas is the same thing, and they never stop promoting the same idea. It's like they say about insanity. It's you're trying to do the same thing time after time and looking for another result. It's idiotic.
What do you think of that?
You're seeing the effect of a pay-to-play government. I mean, the smartest thing we could do as Americans is remove the massive amount of money it takes to get a politician elected, because that just attracts special interests and foreign nations. And that's why you hear all these bizarre programs, because somebody paid, you know, for a politician to get elected and he owes them a favor. You know, if we could remove the money stain from electing politicians, I think we'd have a lot more pragmatic programs.
What's happening in the Middle East with Saudi Arabia and Yemen and the Emirates? Anything going on there?
They're getting their butts kicked. So we decided, after many years of not letting Israel, Saudi Arabia, or the Emirates get into wars, we said, yeah, go right ahead. Just, you know, whatever you want to do. So the Emirates and Saudi Arabia decided to take all our weapons and all our equipment and go in and go beat up the Arab nations, the poorest nation in the Arabian world. And these Houthis with flip-flops are kicking their butts. And, you know, it just goes to show that you can buy all the equipment you want, but if you don't have the will to fight, you're going to lose. So
that's right. Good
they're
point.
Stuck in this horrible conflict that we're helping them with. And at some point, we're going to have to pull out of that, and then Saudi Arabia is going to be in trouble.
Saudi Arabia seems to be recognizing Israel. Do you sense that?
Of course. Well, this is the new paradigm, right? For many, many years, the Sunni nations, the Wahhabists or whatever, were dead set against the creation of Israel. But with the new, younger generation, they've actually joined with Israel. I mean, the anti-Iran movement that you're seeing is not just a Zionist idea. It's also a Wahhabist or Saudi and also Emirati goal. Is to defeat Iran because of their proximity to their oil.
Jim in Newark, Delaware. Hey, Jim, go ahead.
Hey, George. You know how twice before I brought up the prophecy of the Russian invasion of Israel. It seems more possible now if Israel first strikes Persia that Russia, aligned with certain Arab nations, could attempt to invade Israel.
Well, that's an interesting take, Robert.
There is that whole sort of Gog Magog thing going on in the Middle East right now, where you have the northern, you know, dictator, and you have this disquiet in this biblical place. I wish it was that simple, you know. I wish it would just get it over with, but it is, for those that follow prophecy and biblical foretelling, it does seem like it's the end of days, right, where you've got these large forces battling over this small piece of land. But I think it's just part of the Middle East evolution or de-evolution into different allies.
Gaddafi was not a Boy Scout by any means, but he seemed to have been tempering in trying to come over to our side a little bit before he got overthrown and murdered. Do you sense that?
Yeah, well, so Gaddafi always said that Libya was the cork of Africa, and that without Libya, you know, the most of Central Africa would just flow into Europe unrestrained, and he was absolutely right. And what you have now is basically lawlessness and sort of secular division inside Libya, tribal divisions. And we kind of wish we had Gaddafi, or at least his son, you know, Saif Gaddafi, was going to be the one that took over. But, you know, we learn these things after the fact, and we realize why there are strong men in these sort of Shia-Sunni
yep.
nations like Iraq.
And you need that.
But we learn too late, yes.
You can't have a democracy in every country. It just doesn't work.
Well, if you look at how many ethnic groups make up Iran, I mean, just for fun, go look at a map of the languages spoken, you know, the ethnic backgrounds of people in Iran, and you think, do you really want to wade in there and kick everything over? You know, if you thought Iraq was divisive or Afghanistan's divisive, try destabilizing Iran and watch what happens.
Yeah, exactly. And I think Iran is going to get eaten up from within, from the people who are getting tired of the mullahs.
Well, but that's us, though. See, the problem is that we're stirring things up in Iran. You know, Iran has a problem with this sort of dictatorship, this sort of religious, you know, draconian
mm-hmm.
Leadership and rulership, and we are crushing their economy. So, I mean, that doesn't let the young people have a stake in the government, and it doesn't stop the old mullahs from, it doesn't resign, it just makes them more powerful. So we have a very bizarre view of how to treat Iran. And Iran, even though they call us the great Satan or whatever, would be more than happy to do trade with America and sort of get over the 70s and move forward.
And most Iranians from within that country would rather live a Western lifestyle, like us.
Well, it's like Cuba. You know, it's like we feared Cuba, we demonized Cuba, and then we find out, hey, it's a great place to hang out, and you know, and it's run by communists. It's like China. Like, my iPhone comes from a communist country. So, I mean, we can learn to sort of evolve, but for some reason we choose certain countries to demonize and destroy.
All right, we're going to come back in just a moment with Robert Young Pelton and take some final phone calls as we talk about world events. You really get a history lesson when you talk and listen to Robert Young Pelton. And we will be back in a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM and Robert's website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. And we are back with our final segment with Robert Young Pelton. Robert, what about China? What's their end game? They seem to be everywhere these days.
Well, China has for many, many years been very low-key in how they reach out to foreign nations and tie up resources. And they've been growing faster and faster and faster. And their newest thing is the OBAR, the One Belt, One Road initiative, which is kind of like the old Silk Road, where they're trying to build railroads and ports and ways to facilitate and speed up transfer of raw materials into China and goods, you know, back outward. So it's an amazing global plan, which you think would, you know, sort of like the Marshall Plan that America came up after World War II that we don't really do anymore. But there are some problems because of the amount of debt that it involves, and some countries like Malaysia have actually shut down projects because they realized that they could never pay back the amount of money that China is giving them. But China is thinking big. I mean, they are a centralized government. They're thinking how they can get what they need out in the world. And this is how America should be thinking, you know. And Today, for example, when you buy an Apple computer, it's actually shipped from China, directly from China to your home. And we need to think more like that. Why can't we do those things in America, and why aren't people in Africa buying things from America? So China thinks big, and they will win big.
They're taking over the South Pacific these days, too, aren't they?
Yeah, you know, I've been on those islands. You know,
yeah, you have.
It's a very shallow sea, and historically they lay claim to it, but they've taken these atolls and basically turned them into concrete military installations with what look like hotels with, you know, guns on the top and radar and aircraft and whatever. And they lay claim to that area historically, and so does Vietnam and so does Malaysia. But at the end, you know, they made the move and they control it.
Let's go to Anthony in Kaiser, Oregon. Hey, Anthony, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing, George?
Okay.
Okay, real quick, I only take 20 seconds, and I'll take my, you know, the answer off the air.
Sure.
Real quick, Berkeley, the most libtarded globalist university in the country, has stated that atrazine is actually causing that the male frogs to turn female and have homosexual qualities. So when he bashes Alex Jones because of that, he sounds ignorant.
Oh, no, he didn't bash it. He didn't bash
it. He has all ear cancer because of that.
He didn't bash
it. If you don't like the guy because he's eccentric, say it. Don't say it because of you sound stupid. I'm an Army veteran. You're not. Okay? I looked at your background. You're obviously funded by globalists, and you work with a lot of globalists.
Well, Robert, I'll let you have your moment here.
The gentleman's entitled to his own opinion, but this is what I was telling you about when people want to be divisive instead of constructive. What I said was Alec Jones is an entertainer and has a lot of followers because he's gets people excited about things. And I used the gay frogs example because it was a huge viral hit on YouTube. I didn't say anything other than that. But this is an example of where people want to argue instead of ask questions.
Kelly in Moline, Illinois, welcome to the program. Hi, Kel.
Hi, George. I got two comments for you, and then I'll take my reply off the air, I guess.
Okay.
My first one is for you. You remember how for years now you've been talking about the famous line from Howard Beale on the movie Network?
Mad as hell, not going to take it anymore.
Exactly. And I'm wondering why now that we finally have a president who's actually acting on that on our behalf, why you're so intent on tearing him down and taking his phone away from him and not letting him have his freedom of speech.
Whoa. Hold on for a second. What do you mean by what do you mean by tearing him down? Where am I tearing him down?
Well, you just keep saying take his phone away from him.
Wait a minute. I say take his phone away from him and you think I'm tearing him down?
Well, it kind of comes off that way, yeah.
Even his staff members want to take his phone away from him.
Well, I know, but his staff members are the deep state.
He hired them. Wait a minute. He hired the people. He hired the people. I want this guy to be presidential. I want him to be presidential. So the good thing. Are you going to listen to me, Kelly?
Yeah.
I want him to act presidential so the things that he has done, which have been pretty good, will be in the limelight instead of his remarks tweeting. And I'll tell you what, 9 out of 10 people will tell you the same thing.
Well, I'm just saying that, I mean, his actions will speak for themselves, you know?
Exactly.
I just wonder, you know, no president's perfect. None of them speak perfectly. I mean, everybody made fun of George Bush, and he was so stupid, and blah, blah, blah. But President Trump, we the people, did elect him. The Russians had nothing to do with it, which leads me to my next comment. Do you remember when we went into Iraq and the shock and awe?
I sure do.
Okay. I recall news reports of before we even went in, we were announcing it to the whole world. So before we even went in, I remember news reports saying that Saddam was moving his chemical weapons, the remnants of them, across the border into Syria. And I don't believe Assad is using chemical weapons on his own people. I think that the bombs that are being set off over there are hitting some of these stockpiles and harming people. And I just, you know, they've been trying to get us in a war with Russia so bad for the last 2 years. And I think this deep state is playing against President Trump, and they're trying to get him to make a move that they can blame him for that's going to hurt the entire world. I think that's how petty they are, and I do believe that this is what's happening. And I know the news, major news networks has footage of this and can go back in their archives and look and prove what I'm saying is true, that they were moving those weapon stockpiles into Syria.
Well, that's what they reported. You're absolutely right about that.
No, wait, I was actually in Syria before the Iraq war, like days before the war started, and I was actually in a gas station when the war started in Syria. They were moving their money into Syria. So the trucks that were coming through Mosul into Syria were full of money and things that they wanted to get rid of. What you have to remember is that we were in Iraq for 10 years with weapons inspectors, you know, real America, Europe, and the UN, and we knew every single location of every weapon. And I was in all the weapons dumps along the borders, physically looking through all these weapons dumps for weapons of mass destruction. And I was working for CBS 60 Minutes and also ABC News. So there were no weapons of mass destruction. And then on the Twitter thing, one of the things that people have to remember is that one of Steve Bannon's strategies was one of chaos, of, you know, Donald Trump constantly keeps eyes on him. Whatever he says, whatever he tweets, there's over 1.5 to 2 million people that work for the government that are now not under scrutiny because everybody's obsessed with Donald Trump. So tweeting is a strategic decision to keep the attention on Donald Trump.
And I'll say it again, take his phone away. Simple as that.
Well, you know, what's interesting is when you actually measure how much time he spends conducting tweets, you just start to wonder what he does all day in between golfing. So that's the only negative thing about tweets, is you know exactly when they were created.
No, you're right about that. And the fact that I say take his phone away doesn't mean that I can't stand the guy or I'm knocking him as a president. I'm simply saying that take his phone away. You know, he should be concentrating on running the country and not waking up in the morning sending these tweets about anybody who says anything.
How about a better idea? He's a well-known reality star. Why not keep the camera and the microphone on and let's see how the business works? Because that's what people want, is transparency. They want to see what happens in the White House. And you would think a gentleman like Donald Trump would understand that immediately.
Jim in Los Angeles. Hey, Jim, go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call, George.
Sure
first of all, I'd like to debunk the theory about MH370. There's no way that plane could be in the jungle, especially when they found the confirmed debris.
I know. Do me a favor, by the way. Look at that picture and send me an email and let me know what you think that is.
I will. George, I've got a couple other points I'd like to make.
Sure.
You won't hear on air other than me making them. And that, of course, is the neoconservatives that are behind this war agenda in the Middle East. You can read my friend's book, The Transparent Cabal. It's up for free download over at UNS.com. And it talks about the Israeli Likudnik Odeginon neocon plan that was put into play in Iraq. It was a divide-and-conquer plan to basically have the Sunni and the Shia fighting each other, like, and the Kurds as well, like we saw in Iraq. It couldn't have been more successful. It was actually translated from the Hebrew by Israel Shirak, a courageous Israeli in Israel. And that's basically what's unfolding right now in Syria. I talked about it on Russia Today several years ago in 2012. You can Google it. It was the Syrian series broadcast. My name is James Morse, and everything I said in that interview on the Crosstalk program on RT actually has manifested. And again, it's this Israeli Likudnik Odeginon plan, beginning in Iraq, spread to Syria, and what you said earlier about this regime change in Iran, that's a neocon fantasy. That's never going to happen. All that's going to happen, basically, by cutting off the Iranian oil, it's going to put the Strait of Hormuz in peril, and also you're basically going to harden the control, as your eloquent guest had mentioned, with the mullahs. So that's just a neocon fantasy, and you can read Phil Giraldi's articles about this, the former CIA director for Turkey. He's got his articles over at UNS.com as well. I don't know why you don't have any of these people on your show, including the friend I'd mentioned, Stephen Snagoski, for his Transparent Cabal book.
Send us some information on these people.
I email you all the time, George, and it just never gets accepted. One final point.
I'll tell you what, we're going to put you on hold, and Tom's going to get the info from you, okay?
Well, one more point, though, George, one more point, please.
Yep, sure, absolutely, go ahead.
Well, yeah, and I'll finish with 9/11 coming up. This is very, very important, and what your guest had eloquently said about Afghanistan as well. You can go back to the exchange that I had with Lee Hamilton of the 9/11 Commission back in Washington, D.C. And basically, you can read James Bamford's A Pretext for War book and look up Israel as a Terrorist Motivation in the Index. And I'd mentioned that to Lee Hamilton in this exchange that was on C-SPAN. It's got like 500,000 views. You can Google it. It's what motivated the 9/11 hijacker see testimony. Most didn't. And I'd actually, your guest had mentioned he was on 60 Minutes, too. I'd actually talked about the Mearsheimer Walt, the Israel Lobby and U.S. Foreign Policy book, and I tried to get the 60 Minutes executive office to do a segment on it back in 2007. Of course, Jeff Fager refused. All they're worried about now is Russian involvement and Russian non-existent collusion and interference. Why don't we talk about Israel Lobby interference and how Sheldon Adelson basically kicked in millions of dollars to Trump for the November elections. Of course, the casino magnate in Vegas who owns Venetian, Sheldon Adelson, and how all the Republicans kissed his ring at the GOP convention. And I know this because I was in touch with General Flynn as well, and he acknowledged it. We've been in touch on Twitter. Of course, General Flynn. Who was
okay, do you have a question here?
Well, the question I have is, why don't we talk about all these issues?
We do. We do all the time, except you seem like you have your own agenda. Robert, you want to comment at all on this?
Well, he makes a very valid point that what he calls Likudism, which is basically American Israelis who are working towards an agenda that favors sort of Netanyahu right wing. You know, if you go to Israel and you talk to Israelis, they're like us. They don't want to be in the middle of a war. They don't want to be rocketed. They don't want to be in the middle of a conflict with Iran. But if you look at our foreign policy, and he mentioned Sheldon Adelson and then moving the embassy and things like this, there's a very strong special interest lobby in the U.S. government that pushes us towards conflict in the Middle East, which we would normally not be engaged with. And he's right. If Iran is destabilized, it's not going to turn into Kansas. You know, it's not going to suddenly become a nice place. It's going to be like Afghanistan or Libya or Yemen. And these don't favor American involvement because we can't fix things like that. We can't fix 5,000 years of history and infighting, et cetera, et cetera.
How did the Shah lose control?
Well, he was out of touch with the population. And
didn't he have like again, some multi-billion-dollar party right before they threw him out, something like that?
Yeah.
He invited dignitaries, he built tents and air conditioning and everything.
Yes. It was a celebration, I think, of the Persian founding or something. And, you know, Persia is an ancient empire. But, you know, Pahlavi was out of touch with the realities of Iran. He was undermined by leftists and also by when the mullah returned from Paris, people were shocked. You know, it was like Arab Spring. We don't understand how a country can go from looking stable
right to
suddenly dissolving into chaos. And we're going to see more and more of that. I mean, you know, whether it's South Sudan or whether it's Yemen or whatever, we should not get involved in things that we can't fix. But we seem to be dragged into these things by other parties.
John in Las Vegas, take it away, John. Let's get you in before the break.
Hey, how you doing?
Okay.
I just have a question for your guest here.
Sure.
Coming from a PSYOP perspective, I'm Army in the PSYOP community. What authority, authorization, and furthermore, what clearance do you have releasing some of the information that you're speaking on tonight? Because, sir, you're speaking on ongoing operations that, in my opinion, you're putting in jeopardy with releasing this information on this show.
What specific thing did he release?
I'm not at liberty to actually go into some of the specifics on air.
Well, I mean, if he already did, you might as well just
tell
us.
As far as inserting special units into North Korea, you know, those topics right there are very.
They already know that. They already know that. The North Koreans already know that. They're not getting it from
the show. I understand the North Koreans already know that. However, the general public doesn't understand, nor should they understand some of the issues that you're speaking on.
I don't agree with that. I think the public has a right to know what's going on these days. Robert, we're almost out of time.
The public does know what goes on. Yeah, the public does know what goes on. And people say, how did you find that out? Well, you know, Afghans work for the CIA. There are people in North Korea that have communications. There are no secrets on this planet anymore.
This dialogue tells you exactly how people are ticked off and upset, Robert, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, I love this show because you get all types of opinions.
We get their views, and we don't muffle people. We give them a chance to talk, whether we agree with them or not, and they're going to get their chance to say something. They don't get hung up on as long as they're not profane. Robert, we're out of time. Thank you, my friend. Keep in touch. Up next, I'll tell you in a moment.